From Calvary Church of Santa Ana, this is the Calvary Life Podcast, the show where we share stories, tell jokes, and have discussions about faith, life, and God with people from Calvary Church. Here are your hosts, Eric and Matt.
All right, welcome again to the Calvary Life Podcast. My name is Eric Wakeling, here with
Matt Davis. Welcome, everybody.
It is great to be with you. We have a special guest today. This is Jackson Reese with us. Jackson, tell us just a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, so I was born and raised at Calvary. Actually here on campus.
You were born in the baptismal? How'd that?
1010 North Tustin Avenue. I was given through birth to Calvary.
Much like Samuel.
Much like Samuel, yes. Anointed before God, dedicated.
That's awesome.
Became a member. Help out with the middle school group here on campus, and am really involved in the political realm outside of the Calvary Church campus where I've grown up. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's a big part of what we wanted to be able to talk to you about. And you're also a student, right? Tell us about that.
Right. I'm a student at Biola University studying political science, and of course with a minor in biblical studies as well.
Always.
Yes.
Everybody gets one.
Every single person.
Everyone earns one, I should say, right?
You do some work for that.
That's true. Matt and I are both Biola graduates with a Biola senior here. So this is definitely a Biola-centric podcast today, which is always good because down with APU and all the others.
Wow.
Was that too strong?
Yeah, we might need to edit that out later.
No way.
This is a Christian podcast, by the way. So
other really great schools.
Oh, that's true. There's really great schools. All right. Let's talk about what did you want to do going into college? Did you always want to be involved in politics, government, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so not at all. I wanted to be a psychology major, and I really liked the way that the mind worked and how it interacted with other people. And as I continued to grow up, I started to see things that I wasn't a fan of in the public school system and other areas, and decided that maybe a pursuit of righting those wrongs or fixing systems that are broken is a much more virtuous way to pursue actually the rest of my life, rather than just sitting around and thinking about manipulative brains and trying to understand how the person next to me thinks. So that's the main way that I got pushed towards politics. And of course the manipulation is still there.
Nice. That's true.
That's not absent.
Maybe a lot of people might say there's more manipulation in politics than in psychology.
I feel like one or two people might say that. One or two.
Just a few. But we actually want to talk today about and it's easy to make jokes about the political realm. And obviously there's a lot of potential divisiveness out there, but we as believers, we want to be engaged in our world and our nation and in like civic discourse and all of that. So like, give us like a little bit of like what you think about, like, how do you see like a Christian should be involved in all that?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is that what you see on the TV is not at all what's happening in real life. It's really interesting. And not that it's not a reflection of what's happening or an aspect of it, but the amount of work and energy that goes in behind the scenes is vastly different from what you see when you turn on the evening news. And actually a lot more optimistic in my personal mind than you see when you turn on the evening news. It's really easy to demonize or to get to the point that you're really frustrated with the current political system. But actually the more I immerse myself in it, and the more that I surround myself with people who are inherently political by their vocation, the more I actually become more optimistic about that realm, because I see the bright points in the darkness. And it's really cool to begin to see that when it's so easy to step into that pessimism from the outside looking in, because you feel like nothing's getting done.
Now, you didn't just read a book about this or an article. You fully immersed. So what does that look like? What does that mean when you say you immersed yourself into that?
Yeah. So my freshman year of college, actually, I declared poli-sci as a major, which is political science, and decided that I was going to pursue, first and foremost, internship on Capitol Hill. And that unfortunately fell through due to a whole bunch of reasons, but was able to start work as an intern with California Policy Center and got to kind of define my skills and get good at interacting with politicians and understanding policy from a really nuanced level. And then I moved that to D.C. actually this last summer. And I moved to D.C. and started working for the Republican National Committee, who ended up asking me to stay on after the internship was over and to work in Orange County alongside a whole bunch of congressional campaigns. So I've been interacting with congressional leaders or congressional members, as well as campaign managers, pastors, pretty much everybody who might even have a foot in the political realm, I've been able to sit with, talk with, learn from, and see kind of what's happening behind the curtain rather than just what's happening on election day.
And you had a role too with faith engagement was part of your role, right? As you said, you said talking to pastors, like, what does that mean? Faith engagement? Yeah.
Yeah. So a big part of running a candidate for Congress or for any level is to understand that voters are voting based on some set of principles, and that those principles look different than everybody. So both parties do a good job of trying to reach out to different constituencies because they understand that principles are rooted in something greater than just your party preference. So one of the big aspects that the party that I worked for, the Republican Party, reaches out to groups is they tried to target faith communities, and they ask that a group of us would go out and start conversing with who they identify the cultural leaders to be, which are pastors, and start trying to form relationships between those cultural leaders and the political leaders that they want to elect. And so a big part of my job was going back and forth between the two groups and trying to have pitch our politicians as, well, these guys are going to stand up for religious freedom. They're going to stand up for a lot of these other things that you, these principles that are rooted in your faith, as well as going back to those politicians saying, hey, you actually need to stand up for this stuff if we're going to pitch you, because otherwise these constituencies don't want you. And so there's a lot of people that are going to different constituencies. And because of my background, I was able to talk specifically to pastors and politicians about pastors. And so
did they have you specifically because of your background going to more Christian groups, or was it more, were there kind of multiple faith groups that you were trying to go and have conversations with?
Yeah. So there were multiple faith groups, that I was able to have conversations with, but I, of course, because of my Christian background, was able to speak best into the Christian realm. So as I continued to, work with the other members of the faith engagement team, they had people that reached out to Jewish groups, people that reached out to Catholic, Catholic groups, they started to identify that it was best for me to continue sticking to Protestant evangelical churches. And so I worked alongside the director of evangelical engagement and a whole bunch of other people. And then they sent me out to Orange County, where I go to school, and said, just continue doing what you're doing, continue meeting with pastors. We'll give you help from DC and help train you in what you're doing. And you can continue trying to cultivate these relationships. And that's really the number one goal.
Yeah, cool. Like, just let's step for a second and like talk about a little bit more about your time in DC, because that was probably like even just a big sort of life challenge and interesting thing, right? Moving out there, kind of first time really getting, because going to Biola is only maybe like half hour away from home kind of thing, right?
Half hour away from home. It's just far enough that I say that my parents have to make appointments before they come up. So I feel like
do they? I mean, a lot of us know your parents.
They do. They do a really good job.
All right. Good. But yeah, so how was just going out to DC and like even sort of making friends and talking to people that were, I'm sure you started to make friends even with people from both like sides of the aisle and all
that.
Oh
yeah. It was incredible. There were a lot of ways that just, I was not supposed to be out in DC. There were a lot of things that, were not up to me that came through, and just from, I had people reach out to me and say, we'd like to help you with your transportation. We'd like to help you with your housing. We'd like to help you, in all these different aspects that I was struggling to figure out how I would pay for, or like how living in DC for 4.5 months would even work. And so even the logistical side going up into it was super overwhelming, but then all of a sudden everything actually within the same week pretty much came through, and I was fully funded and like able to be able to go out and pursue this. And so I joined up, became an intern with the Republican National Committee during that time and joined their faith engagement team. Mm-hmm. And they had specifically identified that I was going to be the intern from the group of 50 of us that was going to work on faith engagement. Everybody else went to different areas. And just because of my background, because of the major and minor that I'm participating in at Biola, they were like, okay, this student is one that stands apart from some of these other ones when it comes to his specific ability to interact with the faith community. And so that was incredibly awesome. And one of the most amazing parts about the trip in DC, and just immersing myself in DC culture, was that I didn't go out there with a bunch of political references like a lot of my fellow interns did. Rather, I went out with pastoral references, and I was able to meet up with pastors from all over DC, all over Arlington, and be able to have really cool experiences, because the guys that are mentoring these congressmen were the people that I was spending time with. And so there were some really awesome experiences that I had where I, even there was a night that I was in the Capitol building after it had closed with a pastor, and we met probably six or seven congressmen, and I was able to shake their hand, pray over them and their family. Congressmen that I have seen on TV and said, like, I don't agree with any of the policies that you've put forward, but we were able to come together in this way. And it's just like this spark of humanity that destroys all pessimism about the political spectrum. And it's like, I literally feel so bad for the place that I was in even just a few months ago, thinking about like how easy it was to say like, this guy's the bad guy. And then realizing like, no, he believes that there's a different policy, but we actually share principles. And yeah. So there was a whole lot of growth that happened in my personal life that God's walked me through over this summer and been like, hey, there's some real ways that you need to change your point of view before you can actually do anything that you say is virtuous in this area, because you're so quick to misunderstand the other side. And I think it's a problem that a lot of us face.
Yeah, because I feel like, I mean, I want you to take this well, but I feel like you are a different person when you came back from this trip. Like, I could tell.
And that's a good thing.
I'm not saying, and that's where I don't want to say it would be like you're a bad person before. Right. I don't want to imply that. Okay. Because I've had those kind of compliments before.
But maybe like certain assumptions were in place, right? Like,
yeah. You know, I think you maybe might have, you might have just been a little different in your approach to things. And I think there was something that, and maybe people don't expect that, like, hey, spending a summer in DC being around all of that would actually sort of temper and mature a person, you know?
It's not often that you step into a place known for being the swamp and come out and feel like you're actually in a better place than you were before you dove in. But it's absolutely been an incredible maturing experience. I think I'm more optimistic afterwards because politics is pretty void of optimism. There's not a lot of it, and most of the optimism is fake. But you actually go in and you immerse yourself in it, and all of a sudden you're meeting these other 25-year-olds that are just on fire for the Lord, that are serving and saying, you know, I'm here because like I want to actually change and put the right foot forward and be like the person that helps change DC. And one person can't change DC, but you actually start meeting these more and more and more. And there was a church plant that I went to that was growing at like literally hundreds of people a week because they had just planted their church. And I think I began on like the fourth week of the church, and we had just 150 people. And within just a few weeks, we were at 800, and they were like, we have to find a new venue. Like, we can't fit people in this church anymore. And it was just so this incredible experience to see all these people. You're like, okay, these people aren't on TV, but they're the ones that are putting policy forward. They're the ones whose like sweat is going into this, and they're still doing it for the right reasons, even if we're very pessimistic about what we're seeing on TV or the way that we're approaching this. And so I think that I'm a much more optimistic person and far less rash to make decisions about where other people's intentions lie. Because once you get there and you begin to realize that the other side, you're not actually at war with them, and that actually things are pretty great. Like, if you're arguing over small, tiny things or matters in party preference, then things aren't actually that bad.
Would you say that your experience is unique to you, or do you feel like this has been the experience for a lot of the other interns and people that you were hanging out with?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm the one that can make that judgment. I think that I certainly walked away with a unique perspective because I was able to go in with a almost explicitly Christian mindset when I came to it of, this is what I believe God's called me to do, at least for now. And this is how I'm going to spend my summer in the pursuit of getting to a place where I, like, my virtuous actions can become those that are modeled for other people. Mm-hmm. And I don't think not every intern goes with the idea of like, I'm doing this because this is the right thing to do.
Right,
there's a lot of them that are, I mean, there's kids that work next to me that I'm sure that those weren't their intentions, but also there's kids that show up, and I was so excited to see that I wasn't alone, that there were other kids that were strong, like professing Christians, that were capable of even just sitting down talking over lunch with people that you would never expect to be talking about Christianity with. So it was a really cool experience.
Is there a process for you when you're in those environments, almost as you're socially kind of like determining, is this person like a Christian, or are they sort of a cultural Christian, or is it like a Christian that benefits their political ambition, or, you know? And so you're kind of getting to know people, like, oh, where are we really? Because I think maybe a lot of people in some of the environment that you're in, at least that profess to be
for sure,
like followers of Jesus.
Yeah, I think it's hard.
I'm not saying to judge their heart and salvation. But,
right,
you know.
Right.
Right.
I think it's difficult. And at a certain point, you have to start looking at their actions and understanding that like the fruits of their actions are what actually define whether the tree is good or evil. And that's, of course, a paraphrase. But that's really what it comes down to. And a lot of the kids that both kids and adults, like DC is when I first got there, I was told by somebody that DC was one of the number one cities in the country for alcoholism. Cause the city is run by young kids between the age of pretty much 20 and 35, who are all working to
doing the day to day work. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And pretty much everybody else is the lobbyist or the people that are in charge of all of those practically students, that are putting forward the sweat. Wow. And those students are That's coping with, like small living environments, high cost of living, and incredibly stressful jobs by turning to alcohol and turning to a lot of these other things.
Huh.
And so it's pretty easy to sit down and see, okay, this person's saying they're a Christian. Well, after 5 p.m., is this the way that they're actually living? And that's not as difficult to identify when it comes to it. But there are a lot of people that I saw and I was really proud of and like admired in how they stood out from. And one of my, both of my bosses were incredible Christian men that did a great job of not only mentoring me in a professional manner, but also stepping into that personal realm too, and talking about what it was like to be a Christian in that environment.
Cool.
What is it that you've learned about the integration of politics with our life as Christians? We can kind of approach that very one-sided, but what does that look like and what have you learned from that experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge question. It's something that certainly academics and politicians and pastors struggle with across the board. I have a pretty simple, like straightforward mindset when it comes to this. I generally assume that if Jesus called us to preach the gospel and to show his love and to show that the kingdom of God is at hand and capable for everybody to gain through Jesus' life, I see that that's not just preached to the end of the earth, as in we need to go to tribes that don't have it, but rather that our neighbors are even the congressmen and even the, and importantly, the congressmen and importantly, the halls of Congress, especially people that are making these decisions when it comes to how 300 million people are going to live their lives. There might need to be people in those areas that are, and not there might be, there certainly need to be people in those areas that are professing Christians that are putting forward a good example for how to live on a moral spectrum, because there's a lot of people that don't hold to the same moral principles that Christians do. And to enshrine some of those principles in law isn't a prudent decision. And Christians certainly should take an active role in at least being models for how to make moral decisions, at the very least. And I don't think there's any Christian that would disagree with that. The question then becomes, how active does the church need to be in the political realm? And whether the church is a political actor as well. And that's a different question entirely.
Yeah, but let's just, for now, let's stick to the, we can talk about the church stuff, but like for now, let's stick to the individual. Like what do you think, I mean, like what are the ways that you think a individual follower of Jesus, even if they're part of Calvary Church, let's say, you know.
And just, not going to DC.
To DC. Like how can they be engaged in that, you know, in this realm to be able to be both a light for the gospel and for certain principles or virtues that we would hold dear.
Yeah. Well, one of the really cool things about politics is that it's all oriented around principles. Like if I'm going to go for it, I'm going to say, you need to believe in this policy. And we all differ on what policies we believe in. No two people really hold to all the exact same policies. I'm making an argument based on principle, and I'm saying that this policy is the best way to enshrine that principle. And that actually opens the opportunity to then talk about where those principles come from.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool, because every political conversation can then actually become a conversation that's purely principled and can actually become a conversation that's purely essentially religious, because my principles are enshrined in my Christianity and my faith, and that's now capable of being talked about and discussed. And
so that you're talking very theoretical or ethereal. Can you just like put some meat on the bones there? Like what's a principle? What's something that's come up for you that you've had to walk through? Because you're talking about stepping things back. Let's get to the root of why we're doing what we're doing.
Right. So when we, exactly. So I try not to talk about policy as much as I try to talk about principles. So if we're dealing with the pro-life issue of, whether or not abortion should be legal and allowed and accepted.
Yeah.
You, instead of talking about what aspects of the actual policy matter, stepping back and saying, well, what do we believe about the human life and where do we put the dignity of man into play, is a much greater conversation. It's actually an easier one to have without people getting fired up. And it's actually like the more important conversation that needs to be had at hand, and that more people need to have to understand, okay, man has a dignity that's been given to them by God. Genesis 1:1, like God has in God's created the earth in his creation. He's given them value. He's made man in the image of God. And now he has a dignity that separates him from the rest of creation. That's a religious argument that then turns into an argument that you've based your principles in, that then you can go for and say, now I need to back this policy, or now I can make an argument for this policy because of where my principles come from. And understanding that everybody's policy argument comes from a place of principles allows you to then find the common ground between people without ascribing ill intentions to your neighbor because they believe in something different. And I think that's a huge part of it as well.
Yeah.
Because even Christians are really quick to jump to being ill-intentioned, or like looking to their neighbor and saying, oh, he's ill-intentioned and I'm righteous in this situation, and I just have to beat him because he's the enemy and he believes something totally different, and he must be doing that because he's trying to destroy America, or he must be doing that because he's doesn't
wicked
like,
and evil or
exactly.
whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or because he doesn't like unborn children.
Right.
Well, let's reassess. Let's take a breath. Like,
those are conversation killers, right?
For sure. And,
yeah,
and
yeah.
While I'm passionate about this issue, and while I'm passionate about a lot of issues,
yeah, absolutely.
Ascribing ill intentions to another human being is one of the worst things you can do in the political process if you're actually going with an effort not only to show the love of Jesus to the other person, but also to find common ground between them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no common ground between good and evil. But if you can find common ground within the principles, you can then work up and actually have a constructive political conversation. And so I think as individuals, that's the most important place for us all to be active in our conversations with one another and in our understandings that those conversations are so much deeper than simply the policies we're putting forward.
Just FYI, Matt and I are looking at each other with these looks of being impressed.
Yeah. Let me just rapid fire. How old are you?
Yes. I'm 20.
20. And yes. What office are you wanting to run for in the future?
Hopefully president.
Yeah. Hopefully not president.
Hopefully.
I'd be okay if I never.
Supreme Chancellor of the Universe.
Yeah.
No, that's God's job.
I mean, I feel like I knew you like 3 years ago and like you were some twerpy teenager. And now it's like, teach that's me more, Yoda.
I know. Now you just like told us how to live as humans in harmony with one another in a perfect and concise way. I mean, that was epic.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Couldn't repeat a word I said.
well, now it's recorded. So
okay. Perfect.
You used the word prudent without it. Like even like I'd have to. What,
no.
I love the word prudent.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. It's a good word.
It's really
prudent.
Good. Yeah. That was awesome. So that I think that those thoughts though are really great for just people in being able to interact with another, even as neighbors and friends at work or at school or something, that you're going to be around people that are different than you. And how can you be able to have some of these conversations that get into about principles? So you're still having a conversation that has depth and meaning. It doesn't mean you avoid or just stay at the surface, but you almost go so much deeper and in such a way of hearing of the other person, you know, that you hopefully get somewhere, but you also can maintain relationship, right? And represent Christ.
Yeah,
in that,
absolutely.
You know? So that's great. Cause it feels like it's, you know, I was even going to ask, like, is the moderate dead? Like, is there such thing as a moderate, you know?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that in the world today or from what you've glimpsed?
Well, yeah. I think as we move away from principled conversations, which is what I think is happening in culture, we start to see that the moderate is dead because we're incapable of finding that common ground. Because at a certain point, there were people that said, we have all this common ground, so we can lean either way because the policies might look a little different, but we all stand in the same general principles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're unwilling to admit we stand in the same general principles because we're so tied to the policies being different,
right,
that it looks like the moderate is disappearing. But I would go to say that if you could go back to the root of the issue, they're not disappearing at all. That they might hold tightly to their policies, but rather that like that iron grip on, well, this policy is what's correct, or policy A is better than policy B, without ever going back to identify or articulate their principles to one another, is the only thing that's keeping people on the left and right apart from each other.
Mm-hmm. Did you make friends with anyone in DC or otherwise that are Christians but are on the other side of the aisle from you?
So I met a bunch. I didn't actually make any like real friends. Okay. I didn't make a ton of friends while I was in DC.
Right.
I was actually a full-time student and I was working about 50 hours a week.
So yeah, it was 2 months or something or less, right?
Yeah, it was about 4 months.
Sorry.
But it was really it was a lot to do. I have some really good friends from there, but not a ton.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody on the other end of the aisle, when you work in a building that's has the word Republican on it, it's pretty pretty hard to make friends from the other side of the aisle without but I actually have friends from church that we never talked about where we worked, and it was really cool that the church that I was going to, I actually took my mom there at the end of the visit. She came out and visited me for a few days, and it was a really cool experience because I got to walk around and be like, this is where I work, this is this, like, now you can experience the energy of this place, you can see all these cool things. But I took her into church, and church was the one place that you don't ask what office somebody works in. Mm-hmm. You don't ask what political party somebody is. Like, it's, hi, I'm Mark, I'm a greeter here, and I'm a Christian, and there's nothing else we need because the common ground is there.
Right.
And so, like,
and especially DC, that's important.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And it's something that was never articulated to me, that you don't say where you work, but it was something that nobody ever did. And my mom walked in, and she asked the greeter, oh, like, where do you work? Like, you're 23.
Yeah.
You're at this like this small church startup. Like, what office are you a part of? And he was very reluctant to tell her. Like, so reluctant. He was like, why would you ask that? And
yeah.
she was just so like, she was so proud that all these young people that were working in congressional offices were at this church that she just wanted some sort of reference.
Yeah.
And all these people are going to church because it's the one place that they can find common ground with people that they might be arguing with every other day of the week. And it's really cool to see that community is still thriving there. So,
and that's what it's supposed to be like, right? The table, when we take communion, when we gather together, that is the great leveler, right? And so it doesn't matter whether you're a slave or a rich man or Republican or Democrat, we all come under the banner of Jesus.
Absolutely.
So what do you feel like is God's calling on your life? Or do you have a sense of that?
I wish I had a sense of that. I think it'd make my plans for the future a lot easier if I had a clear sense of that. I know God's made me good at this, and for now I'm going to pursue this until he tells me something differently. But whatever he calls me to do, I'm more than happy to do.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, I'll be playing around with the with the political games.
Right. So, and so you're just going to keep taking kind of whatever steps are... You know, do you have a next yet, or you're still waiting?
You know, I'm still waiting for the next step. I'm doing some work on the side with California Policy Center again, but I have some leads in DC, some leads in Sacramento, some leads around here. But right now, I don't feel like there's a clear calling in any direction. And that doesn't mean that I don't continue moving forward, but that means that I'm more than open to scrapping the plan that I've made and reorienting should another plan appear and become the one that God's clearly called me towards. So
cool.
As you've been just seeing what it's like to be light in what we've all perceived as a really dark spot, you're also attending Biola University. And I'm curious for you, we've talked to other people on the podcast where we've said, what is it like to be a Christian on a campus that is not a Christian campus, a private university, but you are on a private university.
Yeah.
What is it like for you to be able to still keep your relationship with Jesus strong in the midst of being on a Christian campus, which is even just a preposterous question to start
with. But are there struggles and temptations and that kind of thing, right?
I mean, well, I would say there's always struggles and temptations. I'm so thankful that Biola is a Christian campus. So thankful for all the ways that they've helped mentor me and continue to cultivate me and form me in a way that makes a young Christian man, as my mom would say, out of me, in like a way that's actually continuing to not just throw information at me, but rather form me in the like mind of Jesus Christ. Like Luke 2:52, I believe, is the only verse about Jesus growing up. And he was, it says that he grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and in favor with men.
Mm-hmm.
And just a really cool short verse that gives four quick ways of like, this is how I suggest you continue to mature. Like, I suggest you grow in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and in favor with man. And I think the Bible has done a good job of helping cultivate that. One of the huge things that I see, though, on Biola's campus and on a lot of Christian campuses is that there's a bubble that's formed. And this bubble means it's really easy to become apathetic about your relationship with God because so many people are helping you shoulder the weight of actually being ambitious about your relationship with him and actually pursuing him. So when you're sitting there and there's people saying, here, let me help you, let me help talk to you about how you're like actually intimately pursuing God, it's really easy for you to not put any work later. Like when you go to church 3 times a week, it's really easy for you to justify not reading your Bible every morning. And so in a way, I think at the beginning of my experience at Biola, and I quickly caught on to this, but I clearly fell into this, well, I have to go to chapel a few times a week. I'm already going to church on Sunday. Why would I read my Bible in the morning? Like, why do I need to pursue him outside of that? And yeah. I think so many Christians, unfortunately, fall into this where people are helping you pursue God. And so you're not doing it yourself and the will isn't there. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, like now I can fully say like, okay, I have the will to actually pursue a relationship with God. And this like ambition is driving me towards him that I think is actually a little bit unnatural on a campus like Biola's, because mm-hmm. the bubble means you have to exert so much more energy to actually pursue him and make sure that that pursuit is actually coming from yourself.
That's great, man. You know, Jackson, I just want to say, like, I'm just so thankful and grateful to have like a young man like you that's part of our body and a leader in our church helping, you know, helping mentor and disciple our young people as well. And it's so awesome to hear you share your story and kind of your heart and all this. And, you know, I've talked to you about how I think you're kind of this, like, I don't want to put too much pressure on you or something, but I think you're sort of this great hope for us, because at some level I've been disappointed in sort of everybody involved in some of this world at some level, even that try to do faith engagement, because I think there's a lot of where I'm a pretty conservative guy, but I don't like this whole thing of really just trashing and destroying the other, you know, yeah, the person absolutely. That's different than you. And it disappoints me quite a bit. And so we've been at some things, you know, where I've yeah. been disappointed, but then I hear you talk and I think, okay, there's hope, you know? And, obviously our hope is in Christ and not in Jackson Reese, but absolutely. You're pretty awesome. I think just, example for, you know, what the future looks like.
Well, yeah. Thanks so much.
Keep talking. You have a lot to say and it's good. I think it's going to unite people and bring them together.
Thanks
yeah.
for that.
Yeah. And if people want to, you know, chat about politics, they can probably find you in the lobby, you know?
Yeah, of course. Lobby, courtyard, down right. in the underground.
Are you by the free coffee or the not so free coffee?
The very free coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a free coffee yeah. guy. I don't know. We'll see. Student. We'll see how long he's by the free coffee. He might be upgraded soon. All right. Well, thanks so much, Jackson, for joining us. This is the Calvary Life Podcast.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us on the Calvary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed our show this week, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. If you want to learn more about Calvary Church or share any of your thoughts, check us out on our website at calvarylife.org or find us on one of our social media accounts. We're on Instagram at calvary_church, Facebook at Calvary Church of Santa Ana, and Twitter at Calvary Life.